I don't know what you probably know what that theme song is, because I know you're a big fan of the show.
I know what you're trying to make it sound like, yes.
Well, you know, as always, we like to entertain the audience every once in a while. Skinny E Media and Bobatron, or Bob Babster. And,
hey, hey, hello there. How do you do?
Hi, hi, hi. We're going to be talking about our British comedy, sitcoms, sketch shows, satire, you name it, we're going to do it. And for anyone who's a bit curious, now that we've passed our prime, it's actually the theme song to Bottom, which for all the purposes, for me, almost sounded like that song Your Love is King by Sade. At least the first verse or stanza. Maybe that's just me.
I'll probably have to listen to that song later on just to confirm that. Because, Love is King. Well, I'll check that out later on just to see if it does indeed so. Yeah, then I won't know what I'll do after that. But I've never heard the song before, so, if it does sound like Bottom, I'll certainly pick up on it.
Well, for this instance, because that is one of your favourite shows, if it's not your number one favourite, if I'm correct?
I think that'd be a pretty good estimate to say that of all the my sitcoms or TV shows, it probably would be my utmost favourite, yes.
Well, then I'll let you dominate the conversation on this one, because with British comedies, it sort of runs the gamut, really, from the good old days of George Formby when AB cleaning windows, and they said, oh, this song's a little too provocative and a bit naughty, to all the hullabaloo about watching that transgender guy playing with a keyboard and slapping his penis and his breasts on the keyboard. It was last year. I don't know what show it was, but it certainly shocked a lot of people and got Ofcom complaints to the core. So
I never, I don't think I saw that or was even aware of that, or maybe if I was aware of it, I've forgotten about it. Yeah, I mean, I know in terms of getting Ofcom complaints, they get most complaints from the comedians Frankie Boyle and Jimmy Carr.
Well, they are quite provocative. I know Frankie Boyle, he's not afraid to speak his mind. But I would say, out of all of them, Roy Chubby Brown is probably the one you want to keep an eye on.
Oh, he can fuck himself. I haven't got anything positive to say about him. He's just a racist, like Bernard Manning and Jim Davidson.
And some might even say Johnny Spite or Spike Milligan, who done brownface or blackface on those 70s-era sitcoms that I know a lot of people in the UK gold watch and hold in high regards.
Well, I don't know about Spike Milligan so much, but with Johnny Spate, he created Till Death Do Us Part in Sickness and Health for Alf Garnett, where he was supposed to be mocking racism, just that a racist didn't really pick up on that and thought he was speaking for them.
I'm afraid so. I mean, in all fairness, when you watch it, it's almost like, you secretly think, you agree with this guy's politics. And I'm, me being in Kent, I'm sure there's a lot of people that agree with what he has to say about migrants and gays, feminists.
Growing up in Gloucestershire, I can tell you there are a lot of people there who hold those views. And again, probably wouldn't have the clairvoyance to realise that they're basically the butt of a joke, not the ones the jokes are made for.
Oh, that's pretty much the Archie Bunker theory for you, which in itself...
Oh, yeah, he influenced Archie Bunker.
No, you're right. I mean, for me, I like both shows, but the British one will always have the upper hand. Same goes with Office, which... American Office, no... It's well past.
Yeah. I can't say Americans always do it worse. I think the American version of Whose Line Is It Anyway was better than the British one, just because it had more going on. But you brought up Roy Chubby Brown earlier on, and of course, I liked him to the likes of Jim Davidson and Bernard Manning. But of course, I mentioned this in the racism episode a few weeks back, that obviously the alternative comedy boom of the 1980s, which gave us people like Rick Mail and Aid Edmondson and Alexei Sale, was of course a reaction or response to that sort of stand-up club comic who just working man's club comic, because it seemed like the two forms of comic that comedy they had back then were the likes of Bernard Manning or Roy Chubby Brown, who did appeal to more working classes and did use some more bad language, but were racist as absolute fuck and just absolutely horrible and panned to every last prejudice there was. Or there was the ultra posh Yes Minister stuff, which was all for the oity toity cricket loving, champagne and bubbly sipping, upper class, high and mighty upper classes. And of course, it would be all squeaky clean and all just prim and proper and everything like that. So of course, the whole point was, you know, we're going to make it something that the regular everyday common people can enjoy, but we're not going to pander to the people who vote BNP or National Front or whatever. And of course, unlike the likes of Bernard Manning, Roy Chubby Brown, the alternative comedy circuit were actually quite well educated, but like not Oxbridge level, like Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie or that malarkey. But you know, at least went to university, and so I've got working brains and everything.
Well, you know, as the audience probably already knows by now, Britain's class system is pretty much rife, and it shows no sign of ending, really. I mean, you have to know your audience a little bit. I mean, in the contemporary era of things, a working class person was probably more going to likely connect with Mrs. Brown's Boys, or perhaps...
isn't that just another example of British comedy that's just... Well, a bit shit, really. I mean, because let's face it, I haven't watched Mrs. Brown's Boys, but I've never heard a single good review of it from anywhere that could be considered any respectable source.
Well, part of it may be because it relies on Irish stereotypes, and it's all sort of jovial, it won't bite type comedy that you would have found like on a sort of sitcom from the 80s or 70s.
And then the fake off.
It's like Father Ted almost. Everyone's saying fake.
Well, Father Ted is quite funny. I don't know if it's aged quite so well. I mean, I was always looking back. I mean, growing up in the 90s, Britain did have a shit ton of very good sitcoms. Of just classic sitcoms. Well, great sitcoms growing up. Obviously, Bottom, then that's the cream of a crop. But there's stuff like Absolutely Fabulous, Men Behaving Badly, One Foot in the Grave, Thin Blue Line, that's Irish, but Good Night Sweetheart, Keeping Up Appearances, The Detectives, and of course you watch a lot of these now and they're probably not quite as good as you remember them. I mean, I watch Good Night Sweetheart again, and the main character, Gary Sparrow, is such a dick. I mean, everything he does is just toxic. But and of course, Men Behaving Badly is a bit more problematic than we'll always remember, because it does pander too much to the zoo and nuts reading lad culture. Obviously, they weren't around at that time being, but you know, Loaded and FHM and whatnot.
Oh, I know very well.
Bottom on the surface seems to pander to that as well, but when you scratch the surface of Bottom, you realise that the butt of a joke is actually that sort of demographic. I don't know what other term to use.
Stuff like it.
Yeah, rather than the women or the other groups of people that they usually target. Whereas with Men Who Badly, it does seem like the butt of a joke is usually women or homosexuals or anyone else that they talk about.
Well, unfortunately for me, I've had, you know, a bit of a laugh or two with some of the outdated type comedies where you can make jokes about, I'm the only gay in the village, or, oh, look at the knockers on hair. I mean, the whole thing is a bit like a bit more of a Randy Only Fools and Horses, which I know for a lot of British people from Kent all the way to like Northumberland and Cumbria, that's considered a cultural darling. If you criticise Only Fools and Horses, you'll be deported. It's like Blackadder.
Yeah, well, Only Fools and Horses is considered like the mainstay or staple of British comedy. And of course, I don't know, sometimes you do watch some of the old episodes, and they actually are pretty damn hilarious. And obviously everyone loves Del Boy and Rodders. Yeah, I don't know what else to really add to that. But yeah, I mean, of course, it is very inoffensive, so it does really appeal to the what we call the Middle Englanders, the probably the Daily Mail reading types who are like who like to go to Sunday services and everything, and play tennis or squash later on, or watch cricket. The point is, it is quite bland and inoffensive. Or we could say the same about the Carry On films now. Obviously, back in the day, they would have been quite near to the knuckle. And of course, the Daily Mail would probably have been throwing a shit fit about them. But nowadays, they're celebrating them.
Well, it's a relic of a pastime that they think has disappeared or gone. And a lot of it's sort of reliant on sexual innuendos and sort of double entendre. She got them nice knockers. Oh, I like a bit of a mushy-mushy with this thick bird. I mean, it's all sort of in that vein of things. And, you know, this is someone who has just recently seen Carry On Emmanuel and Carry On Camping, which I know for anyone who's probably over 70 or 65 holds at least Carry On Camping and the other ones like Up the Khyber in such a high regard. I know the Emmanuel one was a bit controversial when it came out because the BBC rated it AA, 14 and up. Now it's a 15. I mean, I kind of understand why, because it's essentially a parody of a softcore pornographic French movie.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I also feel like, because it's a little different for you, because you're a bit more enlightened than I am, it's almost like I have to laugh at this or I have to like it, because if I don't, I'm not fully British. Although I would like to counter that a little bit, because growing up, I know we kind of forgot to say, what was your experiences with British comedy? But we'll get to that in a moment. My love affair of British comedy is always more or less starting with the animated stuff like Creature Comforts and Wallace and Gromit, which on the surface people don't really consider it, you know, it's all like British comedy, but it is. It's animated. It's U or PG certificate. Break up. Oh. Okay, well, I'll just try to repeat what I've said. Growing up, for me, my favourite ones were, before Alan Partridge and Chris Morris came about, were the animated stuff like Creature Comforts and Bob and Margaret and Wallace and Gromit. Those were my forays to British comedy, with the animated stuff. I don't know if it was the same for you.
I suppose I'm just trying to think of the earliest stuff I would have watched as a kid growing up that would have a comedy. I guess I would have watched a Mr. Bean quite a lot. Obviously, there was that kids' TV show Chuckle Vision, you know, with Paul and Barry Chuckle.
And I can remember that. The theme song.
Yeah, Chuckle Vision. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, and of course, as a kid, it was just absolutely hilarious. I mean, it's a bit silly now, but I mean, obviously, yeah, I mean, you watch that, it does get you in. And of course, yeah, as I said, I've been watching Mr. Bean as well, and that is quite offensive. Most of that was rated U by the BBFC as well. The films weren't, but I mean, but that says it all. But also, I mean, I do remember very early memories of watching Blackadder and the Young Ones, which obviously more aimed more at a slightly older audience. I'm not really onto the Young Ones was a bit more anarchic, a bit more punk rock, and a bit edgier. Not by nowadays standards, but it was quite. I mean, Blackadder, I suppose, might have been, but it's very not. You actually watch the TV shows now, episodes now, they're quite tame. In fact, both Blackadder and the Young Ones throughout their entire series only mentioned the word shit once. You actually watch it, look Blackadder up on the BBFC website. Just in each series, all but one of the episodes being rated PG. But of course, for one of the episodes in each one, also get a 15 rating, probably because 12 wasn't around at the time. So of course, like, okay, so the Blackadder has been TV's been rated 15, even though they clearly don't deserve it. I mean, to put them in the same category as Bottom is a bit absurd.
I mean, Bottom's got more violence, slapstick violence, and more sexual humour. Blackadder's a bit of an odd duckling. It's quite, like you said about Yes Minister, it's a bit more of a twee type of humour, because it relies on sort of historical references and whatnot. And, you know, the same kind of people who would probably watch Keeping Up Appearances.
Yes, very much. Probably, verbally. I mean, like you say, it is actually quite a. It's written by Ben Elton, and it stars, and I think Richard Curtis, and it stars Rowan Atkinson, so it's a bit more highbrow than just something that's written purely by Rick Miller or Ade Edmondson. Obviously, with The Young Ones, some of the episodes are just generally what wrote. In fact, I'm just looking it up on the website. And both series, only one episode in each series is rated 15, the rest of the rate PG. So I think that says it all, really. And it could just be because 12 wasn't available at the time being.
Surprising, because I've seen Young Ones, some of the episodes, and you know, some of the sketches can be a bit on the gruesome end of things, like that scene where who I like to call Fake Johnny Rotten, gets decapitated on the train.
Oh yeah. Oh, yes. Do not lean out of the window. I wonder why. He just leans out. Yeah, it is quite good. I mean, it's pretty tacky when you look at it. But yeah, the Young Ones was written by had Ben Elton in and Liza Minnelli. I don't know who that is or anything. And Rick Mayall wrote it partially as well, but with Bottom. But Ben Elton was no involved whatsoever. It was completely written purely by Rick Mayall and Ade Edmondson. So all the pretentious stuff was completely just thrown to the, which is completely discast to the side. And it was just those two were completely let off the leash to do what the fuck they did. And it's no wonder that it is considered in many circles to be their masterpiece. One person always said that in terms of on-screen violence, if Young Ones is Tom and Jerry, then Bottom is Itchy and Scratchy. I can certainly see that, but I've always made the analogy that if Young Ones is punk rock, then Bottom is hardcore punk. If you get that, and if you get what I mean by that.
I do. With the few episodes I have seen and clips and whatnot. For me, I know Bottom is one of your all-time favourites. For me, it'd probably be Creature Comforts or Alan Partridge. My experience with British comedies are a little bit more unusual because I've seen a lot of American stuff as well, being a man of both countries, regrettably. But Alan Partridge, I remember getting into because there was a DVD for it I got from The Guardian or Observer or Express, one of those papers. It was like series 2, episode 4 or 5, where it's Alan Partridge does not pay his taxes to HM Revenue and Customs. Isn't that right? I thought it was really hilarious. But it's quite mild. I mean, lots of sexual banter, maybe use the word shit. And there were some episodes that used fuck. Once,
season one
did, and season two had it where he said like, Don't be blue, Peter. Needless to say, I had the last laugh. Now, fuck off. And but the DVDs in question, particularly Series 2 and all the other Alan Partridge stuff, was 15, which never sort of bothered me, really, because Alan Partridge was always a bit more of a show that I don't know a lot of children or teenagers would watch. It's mostly aimed at sort of maybe higher brow adults, because they'll be in on the joke a little bit. At least not compared to like the Mighty Boosh.
Apparently it's only season 2 or series 2 of I'm Alan Partridge has got a 15, because the series 1 was rated 12, with the fifth episode getting a PG rating. I got introduced to Alan Partridge on my 14th birthday. My brother bought me the video cassettes of Knowing Me, Knowing You. Yeah, so that was quite funny. I don't think I got most of the jokes that were on it, because I didn't realise that the whole point was Alan Partridge. He was a send-up of that Terry Wogan-style sort of, you know, middle-England breakfast, breakfast news sports commentator. Yeah, typical just a Daily Mail reader and everything. Kind of like a, probably kind of person Jim Davidson appeals to. Who, as Steve Coogan admitted this, I mean, he said, who just wants to live in the back in the 1950s where women were in the kitchen and all the corner shop owners were white and everything. And just, yeah, that's just not reality. And doesn't some, I just still think so. It's okay to say, make quote unquote politically incorrect remarks, which of course, yeah, it's just basically just been left behind by the slow progress of society.
Well, I'll probably agree with that, because there's a lot of scenes of him sort of making jokes at the expense of even other groups within the UK that are, let's just say, they're not as wealthy or as seen in such a positive light as, let's say, someone from the home counties or the southeast. Like, he makes jokes about Geordies and Irish people. And he always does in that sort of way, he talks like that, which I always... He always seemed to laugh at it, and he's always talking to Lynn, and he's like, I bit my foot on a spike, you're freaking out like mad, Lynn. The whole thing's a little bit of an over the top caricature of sorts of, like you said, those sort of TV presenters and newscasters, maybe just a bit more of a dialed down John McCririck, who used to do the horse races.
Yeah, really, that's just exactly what
piece of work.
Yeah, but that's exactly what Alan Partridge is supposed to be, just that John McCrook type of character, with a certain lack of self-awareness or tact, and probably thinks that his jokes are funny, where everyone, or thinks that everyone's laughing with him rather than just laughing at him.
That's kind of what I got from some of the programming myself. I mean, I'm a little bit guilty of trying to be a bit like Alan Partridge and trying to have these sort of views about certain things, because that's what I assume most British people probably think or would prefer to idolise. Maybe not so much, you know, saying jokes about elephant trannies, but, you know, coming across as someone who's from another time or another relic. You know, and like you said about the class system, that sort of humour is maybe a little bit too highbrow for, let's say, the more working class audience, because it's an Armando Iannucci work, who a lot of his comedies tend to be a little bit inaccessible, I would argue, to the kind of people who would watch Mrs. Brown's Boys or Little Britain or Till Death Us Do Part. Hopefully I'm wrong on this, but Armando Iannucci done the thick of it. He done American stuff like Veep and Avenue 5 and Time Trumpet. And a documentary about Bill Clinton that was done in a sort of satirical light. He's good friends with Chris Morris as well. They both worked on Dates, yeah, which I think is the gold standard. It did surprise me a little bit when I heard that Day to Day, like VHS releases, were either PG or 12, because Chris Morris' stuff tends to be quite nasty on the surface. He never really does family works.
Oh yeah, he's obviously his stuff is a bit more, I'm not always so easy to understand, and I think that's why as I said, I mentioned the alternative comedy, the likes of what Rick Mail and Ensman do. They do have a sort of broad appeal because, well, essentially with Bottom, it is basically like a situation case of like an intelligent program pretending to be stupid.
Well, Beavis and operates on that same logic too.
That is true.
Stupid on the surface, but you know, people sort of get in on the joke a little bit because there's supposed to be some sort of teenage stoners who get up to no good. I mean,
yeah, there's always a people who enjoy it but don't realize that they're the butt of a joke.
Oh, absolutely. I think that can be said for a lot of type of shows. Maybe, you know, people who watch South Park, I know it's an American cartoon, think that Eric Cartman has all the answers. He's quite a bully. A lot of kids who I used to know kind of idealized him, even though I wasn't allowed to watch that show, but everyone else did. That always pissed me off. But getting off topic there.
Something I wanted to add, because I forgot to mention this in our racism episode, there was one episode of Bottom where that sort of element comes into it. It's the fourth ever episode that was made. It's called Apocalypse. And basically, the two characters are at this carnival after they've inherited a lot of, well, I say a lot of money, but £600 and everything, 300 of which are taken to the carnival for to have some fun. Anyway, at one point, Richie, after he just said, he's talking to the Romany carnival people. He says, "Oh, I love you, Romy types, with your genital." I can't remember exactly how phrase goes, but anyway, he's been very nuts to him. He reaches into his wallet and finds out someone swiped it. He goes, "Thieving bastard jippos! Someone swiped my wallet." And that was on the original broadcast and on the VHS version. However, on the DVD re-release and all subsequent re-releases, the word jippo is replaced with yobbo.
Blasted yobbos.
Yeah, thieving bastard yobbos.
I get that, because Irish travellers and Romani people are quite an easy target.
Look at Jimmy Carr.
He's certainly got a mouth of his own, and that's about as much as I know about Jimmy Carr. Although,
you don't hear about that joke that he made a few years back.
Well, what did he say?
Okay, he was talking about the Holocaust and everything, and not Grams, and he was talking about, along with the Jews and many other people, a lot of gypsies were added in. I think that he's doing it to try and raise awareness of the fact that gypsies were actually included heavily in the Nazi Holocaust there. So I said Nazi Holocaust, as any other, of course. But obviously he had to do it in a sort of dickish, comedic sort of way, just to not sound too preachy. So he then added on, and no one talked. It's usually overlooked because no one wants to talk about the positives. Needless to say, that got quite a bit of backlash. And while I understand that Carr was wrong, well, at least the claim was trying to bring attention to the fact that gypsies were heavily persecuted in the Holocaust as well, and it seems to overlook it, and anti-gypsy racism is always overlooked and everything. Didn't change the fact that all the people who are laughing at a joke were not seeing it that way, and of course were heavily laughing at the anti-gypsy racism. And of course, I get the impression that, in spite of what I've just said about Carr, he was probably taking the opportunity to also make a cheap joke at the expense of gypsies as well. Anyway, a lot of backlash. Tyson Fury, who himself is a gypsy, I've been Irish or something, said he would chin him. But having said all that, if he intended to use it to bring anti-gypsy prejudice into the spotlight, well, mission accomplished, because it was talked about a lot then, and apparently the government, which had some rather anti-gypsy policies started backtracking on them. So swings and roundabouts. But yeah, I don't think the joke was very funny.
You learn something new every day, really. That sounds a little bit like a dialed down version of the controversy that Cosmo Kramer, aka Fake John Turturro from Seinfeld,
saying the N-word like a comedy club or Laugh Factory, and he got in quite a bit of trouble for that. And he came across as awfully argumentative. He was shouting the word to the crowd in anger. I was just talking about Cosmo Kramer from Seinfeld, like a stand-up routine where he said the N-word, and he was just saying quite flippantly, and there was an air of aggression. It wasn't funny anymore, because it sounded like he was arguing with someone, and he was angry. Oh, bastard. I can't do anything about the Wi-Fi at this area. Just, you have to brace with me on this.
Okay, just reported to double check. Where were we in everything? Of course,
well, we were talking about Cosmo Kramer from Seinfeld. I know that's a example, but that sounds a little similar to that incident. They parodied on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
That's American, Seinfeld, that's American comedy, and to be fair, I've never found American comedy to be as okay, some American comedy can be quite good. Obviously, stuff like South Park and Family Guy do give me a chuckle. It's always the animated ones they always need better at, but all the live action ones like Friends, Frasier, Seinfeld, Spin City, and all that stuff are just, I don't know, always found to be rather lackluster. Of course, it doesn't help, but while The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was always quite funny, I think it's just how it was filmed more than anything else, because it was filmed on the same sort of, with the same sort of cameras that most British sitcoms were filmed with. I think it was a live performance camera rather than a pre-recorded film camera. So, which, of course, it made the zany antics look happen more fluidly, which, of course, could get them laugh. Didn't help, but, of course, American TV is I don't know if it's slightly more censored, but it's slightly more puritanical with its rules than British one was. Do you remember that episode of South Park from 2002 where they talk about how they can finally say shit on television?
Yes, we actually talked about that on one of the earlier podcasts, which I was a little bit cynical, really, because the UK has been saying that word in as many programs as possible.
That's where I was going with it, because I think that episode came out in 2002, and I was sat there like age 70 thinking, what? They can't say shit on television? As a person who'd grown up in the 90s, again, watching Bottom, among other things, like, you realize that where the word shit was thrown around with reckless abandon and everything, it was just a surprise that you can say it. I mean, the BBFC back then was slightly more restricted than they are now, because they would say shit, but they wouldn't say fuck. And most, these lot of TV shows, like Bottom and Behaving Badly, if anyone did say fuck, they'd beep it out. Channel 4 would happily say it, but they wouldn't say cunt, but they do now. This is, again, again, 90s and now of different times. It was a bit, all the talk about how it was a great time, it was a bit more conservative than it is nowadays. But when suddenly hearing that, you can say, oh my god, they can say shit on television. Then I realized, oh yeah. There's like all the TV series like Friends and the like and everything, which, as well as, South Park, and prior to that, which is meant to be a grown-up one, but also all the TV series like X-Files and Buffy and 24, which were meant to be somewhat edgy and everything, and of course they couldn't say. Their bad language never went beyond the levels of piss, crap, and bastard, and son of a bitch. So I was like, always felt it kind of just takes you out of it, where, because it's harder to take it seriously. But that's getting a little off topic. One of the advantages we had over here was because it was on after 9 p.m. You could say quite a lot of bad language. I remember a lot of American celebrities would come over here and go on the Graham Norton show. Have you ever watched that?
Yeah, I've seen episodes.
And they would just be gobsmacked at the stuff that he was allowed to show on TV. Then again, I've heard that a lot of British people are quite surprised at stuff you could say on Australian TV and everything, or at least prior to a certain watershed or anything like that.
Well, they certainly do have a bit more of a liberal way of using the C word. But at the same time, Australian TV actually can kind of restrict it because they don't allow R18 level programming. So oftentimes they will have to censor or somehow switch the R18 to an MA15 or AV15 just so it can air on regular Australian television. It's like how in Britain you can't show restricted 18 hardcore pornography on television. That's an Ofcom violation. You can show the softcore stuff that will pass at 18, but consequence on restricted stations like TVX and Babe Station. I shouldn't know, but I do.
Yeah, that's weird because, like, Australia's R18 plus isn't the equivalent of our R18. It's equivalent of our 18 rating. Australia does have equivalent to the our R18 rating, and that's their X18 plus rating.
Exactly. And this also goes hand in hand with in the video game industry for a long time. You could not release video games that were R18. MA15...
So they didn't have it for them. Oh, yeah. I mean, it was... For all the talks about how I didn't like living in Britain and everything, and I was looking at Australia and how it was treating video games and thinking, wow, glad I just don't live over there. But that's off topic and everything. If we're talking about British... Yeah, well, anyway, we're talking about British comedy and everything, and we want to talk about BBFC and MPA ratings. There are two examples I'd like to actually mention, actually. Both Mr. Bean films.
Oh, yes, of course. Well, I always found that gap a little bit unusual because the first one was PG-13 stateside, and then Mr. Bean's Holiday was G, although they did have to at least trim one or two uses of bad language just to get it to G. It was always, that was always been a bit unusual, but both films are PG in the UK, despite the first one, which caught me by surprise when I first saw it, having the middle finger gesture. He's throwing it about while he's in the car.
Yeah, but that was back then in the 90s. You could do that in a PG rating.
I know. Rude gestures like that now usually confined to 12A or higher, but back then it wasn't really that big of a deal.
Oh, yeah, it does say
N-word in PG films back then.
Well, yeah, that's the difference between... I think that's a difference for 12A made, because, like... The first one, which is 97, is 5 years before 12A, and the second one is 5 years after 12A, and you could just see how, like, the BBFC just changed their attitude towards the PG rating and less the U rating, because, well, again, for reasons we've just said.
No, it's true. PG's got a lot more family-friendly than... when we were both growing up, especially for you. Well,
like you say, I mean, the first film I saw PG rating was Memoirs Invisible Man. And while that did have an edit, it only had a singular F-bomb edited out. Everything else was just left in. And I was supposed to be seven when I saw that. And good grief, the amount of swearing in it when I've rewatched it is... Did I watch this at the cinema when I was, like, in early primary school? My dad took me, and he didn't even have any problems with it. But on the subject of Mr. Bean's Holiday, oh yeah, it does say, I'm looking at the IMDb as we're speaking, alternate versions, several scenes were deleted from US theatrical prints, such as Bean licking the spilled coffee in the laptop and Bean getting his tie stuck in the vending machine. These scenes were restored for the DVD. Doesn't say it was cut out to get the G rating, but who knows.
I doubt scene like that would... push the rating higher. Now, if it was, let's say, Mr. Bean smoking a cigarette or something, they probably would have flagged that. Because you know how the MPA is a little bit weird about certain stuff, even at the G rating. But it was a bit of a stronger one, because I've seen it in both countries. There was that particular scene where he's doing a Nazi salute, and there was a suicide.
PG in Australia as well. Yeah, there was a PG in Australia as well.
Well, you know, Australian PG actually can be a bit more like the US PG. They'll just allow, you know, even something marginal, they'll put it up to PG. It's how Frozen got PG in Australia.
Well, it's been a PG everywhere.
Or G.
Well, yeah, but I was just sort of focusing on how it was like a G in America, PG in both Britain and Australia, or a G in Canada. But if we're talking about Australian PG, just remember that Barbie film got one as well, as it did in Canada as well.
No, that's true. I mean, I actually think they got it right for Aussie and Canadian releases. I mean, I know there's a lot of people freaking out about the 12A and PG-13 for the Barbie film, but I think some of that might have been a bit of an overreaction. I think part of it is maybe confusion of marketing, because it is based on a children's toy. It's actually a little bit more adult-friendly than
some of the marketing that people believe. There are some sexual remarks thrown around and everything, especially the bit at the end, which we won't say the spoilers. Bearing in mind, I mean, in both those countries, I mean, the step up from PG in Australia is M, which is essentially PG-15, and in freaking Canada it's 14A. So I mean, it's like, the fuck. It's like, if they released 14A in Canada, that would mean anyone aged 13 or younger would need to be accompanied by an adult, which would seem a bit excessive for quite an inoffensive film. But that's getting off topic. We're talking about British humour here. I suppose we could talk about the Cornetto trilogy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz and World's End are all 15 certificates, uncut R's. But I do remember when I did see Hot Fuzz, it was actually, some of the violence took me aback. I thought, well, this is one of the most violent films I've ever seen, even though it is comedic. Oh, that scene where a man gets his head smashed in with a church spire.
I was quite surprised by how violent Shaun of the Dead was. Although, I was more surprised by the bit at the beginning when he goes, "Can I get any of you cunts a drink?" Because that was the first time I'd ever heard the word cunt used in a 15-rated film. And apparently the first time it had been used in a 15 was actually a South Park movie, but I don't think you can really make that word out, and it could easily just be interpreted as cock, which, of course, the BBFC would have let go at 15. But yeah. Because just 3 years earlier, I mean, Bridget Jones's Diary, again, another British comedy film, had to have the word cunt removed to get a 15. And I don't know, and they still haven't reinstated that. I just looked up on Netflix right now, and of course Netflix has got the edited version where he says ham-fisted cow rather than obviously what we expect it to be.
Well, I'm guessing probably back then they viewed it as a misogynistic use of the word, because a man was saying it to a woman. So they were probably a bit more on the cautious side during the Robin Duvall days, where it's a good transition from James Furman, but they wanted to tread a little bit more lightly than they usually do. But at that time, you know, you did have some 15 films and 12 films that got away with quite a bit. I mean, Dog Soldiers, I know that's not a comedy, but some people say it is. That was extremely violent.
It's kind of 15. Oh, yeah, I couldn't believe it when I first saw it. I was like, oh, my God, the BBFC had come a long way with just seeing that. Just allowing that with a 15, and I'm very glad they did and everything. It was just knowing that got away with a 15 made me realize that a film did get an 18, it was going to really be earning it.
I feel that way about a lot of films and TV shows, mind you. But I feel that way about a lot of films and TV shows. Well,
yeah. I mean, yeah, well, I totally. I totally get that. Obviously, they've like I say, they moved on. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when Furman was at the helm, and of course, it was just couldn't get away with nothing. Oh, unless of course you were a cartoon about bunny genocide, in which case you could just get away with anything. But I mean, but that's again neither here nor there, off topic.
I will bring up.
Yeah, apparently there was a pardon.
I will bring up the parole officer because that was a 12 certificate. Doing the Robin Duvall days, restricted 12, and I, you know, seeing it, you know, again, I thought, oh, some of it's quite rude. Well, I'm guessing there was some extent.
I think it was on appeal because I think actually it was originally rated given a 15 rating, but on appeal they dropped it to a 12.
I didn't even know about that. I know that happened with 50 Shades of Black and There Will Be Blood. Derby Blood's a little bit unique in that they wanted the 15, but they gave it 12 actually.
Which, I watched that. I watched that recently. Did. It's like quite surprised. I mean, to be fair, I mean, there isn't a lot. It's only towards the end that the violence really becomes particularly, you know, egregious. We start to realize, oh yeah, that is a bit excessive. Says, I don't know how they BBFC thought that could be cool at a 12, but yeah, I mean, I totally get it. But no, I mean, yeah, Parole also was originally slapped with a 15, but they appealed it and it got rated 12.
I didn't even know about that. I learn new things every day because I found some of the jokes, because there's a lot of sort of phallic humor, a little bit, that was awfully risque. And then obviously you had Ali G in the house. That was 15, when 15s were sort of in a transition period of sorts. That one was pretty rude and raunchy, and had that come out under Furman, he probably would have cracked down on it a bit further, especially doing some of the jokes we were talking about, his penis or something like that. You even see his 10-foot cock come out of his pants after he's shooting all the gangsters in a dream sequence that he has. I actually like that movie. I know people find it offensive and just crap, but I like Ali G.
Oh, it's hilarious. Oh, I remember I saw it. Me and my dad went to see it at the cinema. We just found it absolutely hilarious. I mean, I remember one of my dad's comments when he was driving me back was that how Michael Gambon and Charles Dance got talked to do a film like that, we'll never know. But I mean, yeah, the film is hilarious. The film's hilarious. And obviously it's been overshadowed by Borat for the following few years. And so that's funny. Why do we talk about? Because I was trying to think. Because I saw, I watched Four Weddings and a Funeral during lockdown. And of course, that was a 15. That was released under Furman's, Furman's regime. But then again, I suppose there's nothing, that's not too aggressive. I mean, outside of it, I mean, it's probably just that one scene where they're saying fuck constantly. It's not that strong a film, really.
I was told by that as well. They actually featured it on I think it's called Community Channel, Community TV, little video about how the BBFC operates, and they particularly note that particular scene as the only reason why the film got a 15 anyway. Other than that, the film probably would have been fine at PG or 12.
I'd gone for a 12, basically, just outside of caution. I mean, Love Actually got an M rating in Australia, rather, as opposed to the 15 and R ratings it got in Britain and America, respectively. But then again, I did watch Love Actually quite recently, just back in December. Whereas, not only was the F-bomb thrown around, quite a few times, there's also that scene where they're filming a porno as well.
I remember that scene.
Yeah, a bit surprising that would get away than in Australia. Mind you, that's it. But as weird as I think America's rating system is, Australia's is mind-boggling. Because they talk about how, like, in America, it goes from 30, at PG-13 to R, it goes from 13 to 17. But, like, with frickin' Australia, it's like, the M is basically PG-15, and the MA-15 plus is 15A. So it's like, well, hang on, there's just two different versions of 15. How are you just... How are you differentiating?
Well, it's even worse when you think about it because for a long time, the PG rating said parental guidance recommended for anyone under 15 years. I'm like, you can't have three different ratings altogether that outline the same thing. I mean, how does someone go from there? I mean, as they revamped the ratings back around the mid-2000s, they made it a little bit more clear. And they got rid of that 15 statement on the PG and they left it a bit more vague for the M one. So people more or less treat M as if it was like PG 2.0, just like the 12A. So a lot of a lot more R-rated films also do get M ratings in Australia, like Moonlight, Nomadland, those were King's Speech, or M.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Nomadland was rated 12A here anyway, so, I mean...
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I can't... Well, from what I've read, yeah. Moonlight's a 15, but, yeah. I think Nomadland was actually a 12A as well.
But quite a few, like the British comedies I can think of, they were passed at the M level in Australia. Well, obviously there, because they have more relaxed use of strong language, but to hear the C word, but that sort of banter, you would never be able to get away with on US TV, let alone even British TV. They use the C word so flippantly. Then again, you know, you've got stuff like Free Agents, which aired on 4, and then Modern Toss, which is a cartoon.
I know Modern Toss. My brother has several books of them. With Mr. Tourette, the handyman. Oh no, that's not what I wanted at all. What, you're some sort of cunt? I still want paying.
Oh yes, I mean, yeah, I always love adult cartoons anyways, which I will be talking about in a moment. I was always like,
I think Britain's very good at those, though.
Well, yeah, when I talk to people about Monkey Dust or Bob and Margaret, or even Creature Comforts, no one ever knows what I'm talking about. They're sort of like, who? Bromwell High. No one knows what I'm talking about, but I'm sure as hell they've heard of Aqua Teen Hunger Force or South Park and the anime Monkey stuff.
Monkey Dust is funny, but I was more referring to that Full English that came out a few years back.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about. That one was a bit controversial from what I remember, and it also got an 18 certificate on DVD, which, as you well know how I am, if it's a cartoon and an 18, I'm always like, oh, I'm a bit curious what's going on here.
Especially now, especially nowadays. Yeah, it did throw the word cunt around quite a bit, so that's always something to irk my interest, and that's all. It's cool. I remember him doing a skit where David Cameron was going through his his history, saying, he was a cunt. This is my answer. He was also a cunt. I come from a long line of cunts. Oh dear.
That sounds like something from a Guy Ritchie movie almost. I mean, it's been a while since I've seen Full English, but yeah. I mean, I firstly thought it was funny, but yeah, people will say, oh, it's like a half-baked attempt at trying to replicate the Family Guy formula, which I could see why people say that, but to each his own. I mean, the best adult cartoons in the UK are a bit of a once in a blue moon sort of thing, really. I think where Britain has its strengths in terms of animation, it usually tends to be the family stuf and stop motion. Obviously, Aardman's known for that. But then again, Aardman did Angry Kid, and that wasn't really appropriate for families. Not from what I was aware of, with kids smashing hammers on their head. You know, kid has got a bit more of like a Tourette's. He's a bit like a ginger bastard, or so you would hear, like in a schoolyard.
Yeah, I know. I mean, one of the back in 2010, they did a TV show about evolving puppets and everything that was more aimed at grown-ups called Mongrels. Did you ever see that?
I sure have. I've always
that was funny. That was funny just because of Vince, really. And it's just so funny because we're auditioning to get on Spring Watch and Vince fails. He goes, stupid, useless casting directors wouldn't know proper acting if it fucked them. I mean, you don't know that what he said. It beeped out. And he goes, Marion the cat, who's just bumped into him, goes, hello, Vince. And he just turns around and goes, did you just call me a cunt? It became one of his catchphrases. He just called me a cunt, even though no one said anything of the sort. But of course, he just got a extreme case of Tourette's, and he's obviously batshit insane. But it is incredibly funny.
I mean, find DVDs for that, so... but it's very hard to find. DVDs.
I got one DVD of it.
Oh shit!
No, I got it back in the day.
I might have to ask it off of you. So I'm trying to do my collection of adult British cartoons. You can't get Bob and Margaret because that's on YouTube. But I got Modern Toss the other day. And I've got I Am Not an Animal, which is Steve Coogan and a horse and a bunch of animals. It's very, very weird looking cartoon. It's almost like something out of a surrealist nightmare because they use sort of human features and plastered it as if it's like cutout designs. It's also computer generated and a bit surreal. That's certainly one of the more darker British cartoons out there that isn't Monkey Dust. Now, I know Monkey Dust has a bit of a reputation because of how dark it is and lots of jokes about people, you know, trying to suck cock, but you can't because the police will come and find out what he's doing, and the suicide jokes. It's quite nasty. I know you all said right. From earlier on, are you think Monkey Dust was going to get an 18 certificate?
No, I did at the beginning, yeah, before I realised how much they'd chilled out in recent years, which boggles my mind because I'm watching. Because back when this comes to the bottom, they did five live shows. And of course, they're all rated 18. And obviously, for the first few, I understand because it was like back in the day of Furman. So the stronger language, most people use the word cunt, would have probably pushed it into 18. But it's like the next two were released after he left. And of course, I thought by then they'd chilled out on that. Well, the last one was rated 2003, they might not have chilled out on that just then. But looking at all of them now, it's just, yeah, these are clearly 15 material. They should not be rated 18. Just like the film Guesthouse Paradiso actually got away with was a 15 rated, even though I think the word cunt was mentioned, I don't know how many times. Oh yeah, that could be the first film I'd heard with a 15 rated film with the word cunt, and yeah, but I probably didn't pick up on it at the time being.
I know there's been a few films that have come around that time that go with that kind of language. I know Officer and a Gentleman and With Nail and I, that was a 15, and I had about like one or two uses, which caught me by surprise, because I know you couldn't even say the F word a heavy amount of times, even at the 15. I mean, nowadays you could say, you know, there's no limit on F-bombs, but back then they still restricted it, particularly motherfucker.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember films like Cliffhanger and Point Break, and one of them had to be cut down to get a 15 out of cinema. And of course, one of the reasons, not just the violence, but because they had to cut down the amount of uses of the amount of F-bombs they did. But obviously, that's not really on the subject that we're talking about. It's a bit off-topic. Just trying to think of other British sitcoms being...
Well, like Vicar of Dibley, that's a personal favourite of mine. Catherine Tate. I like Come Fly With Me. I know that one's got quite a reputation.
I'm not seeing that one. I mean, I might have heard. It's not that one in the airport with Matt Lucas and Dave Williams, is it?
It is. It's yeah, one of the few handful of sort of post-2000 show that have blackface in it. And yes, I'm guilty of laughing at it because it was so ridiculous. And then Mighty Boosh, I know I go on about that. Yes.
Yeah, what's Mighty Boosh?
That's quite questionable humour, not in terms of language or sex, but there are scenes of people darkening their skin up as part of a punchline. It's either Noel Fielding or Julian Barrett that does these types of roles, and you know, on the surface, like, I mean, I'm sort of guilty for laughing at it, and I'm sort of afraid to tell people, no, I like the Mighty Boosh show, and when we're seeing it with at my friend's place, my father's friend, who I will not mention his name, but yes, he introduced me to that show, and I thought it was hilarious, but in fairness, it probably would not pass the PC test by today's standards.
Well, no, I can imagine it wouldn't. That seems quite surprising. That's such seemingly quite a recent time, like in the early 2000s, when the mid 2000s, they still thought it was okay to do blackface because at that point, that shit had long since stopped being cool or anything.
I was going to mention about dark comedies for a second because I know that's a bit of a grey area when it comes to ratings policy at the BBFC because almost the nature of the humour itself. I mean, I can start talking about Jam by Chris Moss, which actually is one of my favourite TV shows of all time, although not as good as Dexter's Lab. But I always sort of intrigued me by the DVD cover itself because it got an 18 certificate. It was all a bit of a mystery because it doesn't give you an indication of what it's actually about. But it's not really so much a comedy as much as it is some sort of endurance test, this sort of experiment on the audience. Let me put it this way. ejaculating penises. A person who has a penis, a woman who has a penis, and they try to say she was born with two genders. There's things of people being thrown shit at or something like that. A whole lot of sort of unsettling and disturbing imagery involving a man with no skeleton such as his spine, and being forced to smoke a cigarette and crying for life. Let me remind you again, this is a comedy by Chris Morris. I didn't see it as that. So
he's the kind of, yes. Well, I mean, he is the kind of guy that does do transgressive stuff like that, just to sort of like poke at the boundaries, as it were. I mean, he did that film Four Lions, but circa, what was it? I think it was 2010, didn't it?
Yep, it sure were. I know we've mentioned that in the past.
I watched it. I didn't think it was that, I mean, that transgressive. Maybe I'm just not thinking of a wider context of it, because point of view of a bunch of jihadists, but of course said jihadists are just completely incompetent and just fuck up all the time. I've seen it once, I can't remember it too well in all fairness, but it does make me remind me of that jihadist skit from Monkey Dust as well, where there's two young
was ripped off that.
Probably a kernel of truth in that. But it's just quite funny watching them just trying, thinking of blowing up counter jihad against the West. The problem is they're so like so accustomed to living in the West and so much a part of it, of the society, that they can't even bring themselves to do it, or at least if they try to do it, they're gonna be so inept at it, and just it won't work.
God help these people. And this was, you know, post 9/11, so they're walking on shaky ground right there. But they did it, and they didn't look like they faced much of the consequences, really. I know Monkey Dust never released in the US, even though it would be a very fitting type show for a sort of Adult Swim type of program, because it is sketch oriented, and some of the animation does look a little bit cheap at places, but I think that's kind of the purpose effect involved. I mean, as far as going back to Chris Morris, I could talk about him for hours, really, because he is one of the legendary satirists. But I know if I start talking about Brass Eye, just as much as I talk about Da Vinci Code, people are probably going to shut this thing off. They're going to be like, okay, that's it. I don't want to hear from him anymore. And then Four Lions, talked about to great length, because, I thought the government was going to come and get me simply because I was watching a comedy on terrorism. I still feel that way, despite what people say. You won't go to prison for watching a jihad comedy. But,
well, no, because everyone else has watched it and they haven't gone to jail, so there's no reason to think that you would.
Well, you know how paranoid I am. I mean, that's what Chris Morris does to me. He makes me scared for my life. The only one of his that I didn't feel that way was The Day Today. And the film they did called The Day Shall Come, which, weirdly enough, was made in America, in the Dominican Republic. I was like, It was the most un-Chris Morris thing he's ever done. I don't know. Dark comedies. I know people talk a great deal about The League of Gentlemen and Inside Number 9 and Psychoville. I don't have much experience with those, but I do know Inside Number 9 had a particular scene of someone's head being blown off, and it made it look like he was on a game show or something. Some people sent Ofcom complaints because they thought it was too realistic, or they thought they were being misled. No, no, it was part of a TV show, a dark comedy of sorts.
Well, I mean, I don't think I might have watched it. Sorry. I think I lost the thread at some point. What? Show did you say again?
Inside Number 9.
Oh, I was also
talking about League of Gentlemen as well.
Oh yeah, my brother showed me a bit of that and everything. Yeah, that was remarkably dark. Okay, I remember three particular skits. The whole This Is a Toad one. I remember that one. I remember the Job Seekers one of Okie pokey, click okie, good morning job seekers. and her being obsessed with pens. But yeah, but obviously the most one I remember most fully is the whole is the this is a local shop for local people, and just how everyone's just completely just how we just completely shut off from the rest of the world, and they've just never moved outside their little their little settlement.
Well, you might not like it even further because the town is called Royston Vasey, who's the legal name of Roy Chubby Brown, which no one's picked up on that, except a few people, but most people pick up on the blackface character called Papa Lazaru. It's like something out of a Mighty Boosh skit. I mean, it's more or less appeals to the same type of people. I know some people who sort of found Mighty Boosh and to some extent League of Gentlemen kind of disturbing. Or scary. That's fine by me. I like.
Well, it's supposed to be the. I think it was supposed to be quite dark. It's well, like I say, like Monkey Dust. I mean, his whole thing was it's completely dark, sardonic humor, such as that Timmy and his divorced dad.
Exactly.
Timmy, daddy. I'll be a moment. Moments Timmy goes off and he just does commit suicide. Then Timmy goes, Daddy, I didn't mean those things I said. I want to come live with you, Daddy. Daddy. Oh, that always does rub you the wrong way. But again, you've got to poke at the boundaries to see where they are and to see if you can push it, progress society forward.
They say, well, like my sense of humour, some of it's, most people might not even see its humour, like anti-comedy. Of sorts, which I think Britain does best on some level, which is how you get stuff like Inside Number 9 and that sort of thing, Psychoville, 90 Nights, another one that people sort of hold in a sinister regards. But I'll sort of reel it back in. I'll talk about Graham Lynham, who done Father Ted in IT Crowd. Yes, I know I'm in IT Crowd, but no, that's Richard Iowade, not me. But I know he's a bit controversial because of his views on transgender people. So he's been cancelled and he hasn't really made anything since.
And I must have missed that one. Richard Iowade.
Well, I think there were some episodes of IT Crowd. I think one of them had to be booted off on all four because it was too transphobic. For modern day standards, or at least it seems that way. I didn't quite pick it up because when I went to Bristol to go to the Film 4 conference, I actually told them to sign my copy of IT Crowd Series 1 I got from the charity shop. And they thankfully signed it. But nothing was made about Graham Lynham's transphobia.
All right. I know about Graham Lynham there, I think. Yeah, such a shame that he was made something as good as Father Ted, but ended up just being a transphobic dick. And mind you, I said it, since the turn of the millennium, there's only two British sitcoms that have ever really been found to be worth watching. First one is My Hero, that superhero one that had Ard Lo Hanlon in. Oh, what the fuck's in there? Hugh Dennison, who may have noticed from Mock the Week. And of course, he's also in the other one I was going to mention, of course, Not Going Out.
That's been on for a long time. I've seen the name before, but I don't really know what it is. Is it like Friday Night Dinner?
I don't know. I haven't seen Friday Night Dinner. Basically, what it is, it started off as this guy who was basically sort of. Not really renting, but mooching off his landlady in London. First, it started. The first series started off with him living with this Californian landlady called Kate, and of course, the point is that she was his best mate's ex. And where was I at? Yeah, it's basically just written by both Lee Mack and Tim Vine. So of course, a lot of their clever wordplay and one-liners and puns were brought in, but Kate disappeared, who was played by Megan Dodds, disappeared off the first series. And they brought in Sally Breton to play Lucy, who became an ex, who was a Tim Vine's character's little sister. And then there's just the ninja wacky, and she ended up owning the flat and everything, so it's just back to where it was to begin with. If yeah, it's just a sort of wacky antics to get to, and in both series he's constantly trying to hit on the main the bird that he's living with. But of course now it's changed, and he's the two characters, Lee, who's played by Lee Mack, yeah, he wasn't very imaginative of writing his characters, his name, are now married to the Lucy, and they've got kids and everything. The last few series have turned into a sort of domestic sitcom like My Family. Obviously, slightly bitter, slightly bit edgier, although not much.
I have to give this one a try, really.
You should watch it. It's damn funny. Just for the one-liners. The one-liners will have you pissing yourself.
Hmm. Oh, sorry. I sort of lost myself a little bit there. But I know this isn't BBFC related, but out of all the channels, which one is your favorite? Because I know for me, Channel 4 is the number one, although I have been guilty for liking BBC shows. Although I'm supposed to not like it because BBC is TV licensed.
I don't know what my favorite. I've always had more of a soft spot for the BBC because they've always produced the vast majority of the sitcoms that I grew up watching, the ones that are so hard, including but not limited to Bottom and The Young Ones.
All right, well, I'll take your word for it. I've always had this sort of suspicion that with shows like Bottom and The Young Ones, it'd probably be more fitting for something like Channel 4, because Channel 4 generally specializes in sort of more outre, sometimes explicit, sometimes outrageous type programming.
But it would let them get away with a lot.
Safe side.
Well, it's quite a safe side, not as safe as bloody ITV, though.
Oh, no, there's no comparison. I mean, ITV, yeah, what are they known for? TDTV and Spinning Image, which I do like. I like sort of adult animation and puppetry. I don't know if you like those.
I watched 2DTV once or twice. I've seen Spitting Image. In fact, one of my, for a Christmas of 1996, my brother got a video of Spitting Image, which was basically just them, all their skits surrounding the surrounding Euro 96. Yeah, that's my only introduction to it, my only experience with it. And it is quite funny, but I always just found most of the comedy on ITV or HTV, or whatever it was known, was always the playing film, it really safe stuff. That's why every time you see a film broadcast on it, they would always absolutely butcher it, although BBC could do that a bit as well. It's been quite infamous for its airing of RoboCop, although that was just the American network TV. You know, the your client's a crumb bag, you're a crumb bag one. They reduced it to a PG rating. Well, hell with that, it's almost a U rating.
Well, I don't watch ITV myself, but I know what you're talking about there, although they have sort of broken their show a little bit because they did air Love Island. I think one of their stations, like ITV2, airs Family Guy, and Family Guy's pretty inappropriate. Wentworth.
Well, that was aired on on BBC, wasn't it? BBC Three.
Yeah, for a long time it were, but then they ITV bought the rights to it, and now it's aired on that station. Because I remember scanning for the channels lately, and I saw Family Guy was being on ITV2, and I thought, they're growing out of their show a little bit. I'm guessing Channel 4 couldn't afford the rights to it, or maybe they already had Simpsons, so they didn't need to do any further. But I know that's more of an American cartoon, so I'd like to apologize if I was talking about something that's not related. But yeah, we are talking about British sitcoms and television. It's
all comedy in general.
About the TV stations, I do like Channel 4. I cannot speak on for 5. ITV also do Creature Comforts. That's actually one of my favourites. So, by extension, I guess I do like ITV because Creature Comforts aired on there. And it's very vanilla. I mean, it's PG, but there are a joke or two about pornography. And there's a thing, someone says arsehole. But because it's stop-motion puppets, people just assume it's a family work. Like, well, not quite like Craston Villas.
Well, yeah. Well, I guess you're right. Of course, we've all this time about speaking about, British comedy. We haven't mentioned Monty Python.
Well, you got to start with somewhere. Life of Brian, known for its blasphemous content, and then Holy Grail, which I know had to be excised a fair bit. I know that scene with knight being slashed and diced.
Well, I mean, that was the first one they did and everything. And of course, in the cases of, I think both those films are now 12A rated. I know Life of Brian is now a 12A. I think Holy Grail is as well. And of course, Meaning of Life was originally an 18. Of course, and now it's a 15. But I mean, no, of course, I mean, Monty, you could probably say when it comes to British humour, I'd always say Monty Python is where it all began. I know there was stuff beforehand, but that's the stuff that really kicked it in the nuts and sent it going forward. I remember, again, for Christmas, my brother got, for one of Christmases, I can't remember which one it was, my brother got the And Now for Something Completely Different on video, which was just a rehash of all its most famous skits, which I just found to be incredibly funny. I haven't got much to add to it about that, but of course, I only got away with a PG rating.
Ah, her ratings for Monty Python are kind of all over the place from what it sounds like, really. I mean, for me, Life of Brian and Holy Grail, the two ones I'm most familiar with. Flying Circus, I do remember it aired on a few occasions. I was always more sort of perceptive to the animation elements in that one. You know, Terry Gilliam, who made 12 Monkeys, done a lot of the animation for Monty Python with the big foot slamming onto the ground, which is quite funny. Censorship-wise, I'm sure they had to cut and trim a few things because they've always been on the cheeky side. And I mean, we could go on about Life of Brian for hours on here. I mean, I've got it on DVD. I feel like almost like a criminal for having it because where I got it at the charity shop was one of the areas where they banned it. Go figure.
About the cinema.
So many councils. Well, several councils did not take too lightly to the blasphemy, so they banned Canterbury.
Yeah, they cancelled it at the cinema, although I don't think they would do it now and everything. But the point is that like they can't, those rules, the council rules apply to the cinema. They don't apply to the owning it on video.
No, that is true. It's just from my BBFC nerdiness, it always does intrigue me as to how in certain areas you can't see certain films. I mean, Last Tango in Paris, they tried to ban in Cincinnati, Ohio, but that was rejected on court reasons, even though in all fairness, it should have banned it because of the butter scene.
It would have violated the First Amendment anyway, wouldn't it?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, Miller v. California, there was a lawsuit permitted for no censorship of films, but the judge who did set in the stone Miller v. California did say, for obscenity, I know it when I see it. He was referring to porn or sort of these erotica films that came out in the daylight, Last Tango and Emmanuel. I'm sure he probably include Clockwork Orange on there as well, but sorry, I got a little bit off topic there. But yeah.
I remember one, of course, talking about videos. Have you heard of Not for 9 o'clock News?
By name only.
Well, I mean, that was a sitcom in the late 70s. Well, it's not a sitcom, more of a sketch show and everything. Anyway, I watched it a bit when I was about 11. I found it very funny. My mum bought me it on video. So of course, I had a 12 rating. I remember one time I had a friend of mine around when I was still 11, saw it in my cabinet, and he said, a 12 rated video? Does your mum know you've got it? It's like, My mum fucking bought it for me. I mean, I was only 1 year under. I mean, I don't think she gave two shits. But of course, I mean, I remember that later on that that year, well, for Christmas, my dad bought me three episodes of Bottom on video. It was like the second part of series two on video. That was at 15. And of course, I remember the end of the following Christmas, my mum bought me a Bottom Fluff, which is basically a series of outtakes, which had an 18 rating. I remember my brother basically saying, "Mum, I remember when I was that age, if a video was at 18, it was strictly banned. And then now you're buying Bob." He calls me Bob, anyway. Bob on video. Of course, this brother's 7 years older than me. So he's, "Yeah, Paul, when you were 12, I was 5. They probably didn't want a 5-year-old watching an 18-rated video, even though the content now would probably easily pass through at 15.
You know,
just a train of thought I've had.
No, it's perfectly fine. I mean, you are one badass person, because that would have never happened in my house. Had I said, "Oh, I want to watch Perfect Blue or Fritz the Cat," because I was obsessed with animated films and TV shows that work for children, but that would have never happened in my house. I mean, although they did relax a bit. I mean, I got the Simpsons Film Festival VHS tape when I was younger than 12, which I thought, "Oh, badass me." And then Ghost in the Show, I got 13. So there are many moments where I've sort of broken the law and also been a bit cheeky. Or I sort of explained to them, "But I want to see it for these reasons." And as you probably already know this, it's usually the parent who will buy it. The kid has to be stepped to the side so they can't be seen in the same company in case they ask for ID. And then, boom, here you go. It's like how people try to get adults to buy them ciggies. Although I'm sure a lot of shops are cracking down on that. Like, "Hey, don't be buying those for those little kids, you punks. Get out." So your parents sound quite badass to me, really. I would have loved to have had something like, let's say, Perfect Blue or Fritz the Cat when I was about 10 or 12. But
my mum bought.
What's going to happen?
Also, the following Christmas of 98, when I was 13, my mum also bought me Saturday Night Fever on video, which had an 18. So, you know, I mean, make of that what you will.
Well, she probably might have assumed that because it's such a well-known film, most people can quote it or sort of refer to it. That's one of the few 18 films I'm aware of, and it still is 18 now, that has seen by everyone. Everyone knows about it. It's like Pulp Fiction. Yeah, the rating sort of is thrown out the door because it's a very popular movie.
It is an 18 now. Don't know if it would probably get away with... It could probably get away with
a C-word.
Yeah, I could get away with it. I could get away with 15 now out of 4. Just so quick, let me look it up. When was the last time it was rated? Oh, no, 2013. Shit. Oh, shit. It was released recently on 2018. Or, it says very strong language. It must be the use of a C, wouldn't it? Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't think it'd be a fit. Maybe it wouldn't be a 15 nowadays, seeing it's only rated 5 years ago. But anyway, that's off topic. So, actually, is there much more we can cover? We could potentially be here all day. I mean, sure, I haven't mentioned Red Dwarf, and because that was that's popular both sides. You know, and take, but I don't know what can we add to it.
Red Dwarf, I've never seen. I mean, I'm more familiar with its US version, which is Futurama. The two shows are quite similar to one another.
I mean,
I'm sure that was a show you loved as a child.
Oh, what, Futurama?
Well, no, Red Dwarf.
I love Red Dwarf. That was good. Very good. Obviously not as much love Bottom, but then Bottom was the one I liked more than anything else in the world. So, I mean, yeah, nothing will ever. Yeah, but yeah. No, I mean, most of those sitcoms I enjoyed watching growing up, even if not all of them have aged particularly well.
Well, I will ask you something sensitive. Anytime you watch Bottom or you see, let's say, Rick Mile, because he passed away from a heart attack does it make you cry in the same way that watching Toy Story to me makes me cry? Because it's nostalgic.
Well, not every time, otherwise but it does always does tend to hit me a bit hard and everything, in knowing that I'll never see Rick Mail on that'll never ever done by Rick Mail again. I mean, I saw Rick Mail live back in 2006 when he did a live broadcast of A New Statesman, that Alan Bastard show he does, where it's sort of political comedy. So that was quite nice. One thing I've always bummed out about is that I never saw a single Bottom live. And of course, the last one was done in 2003. They were touring when I was in the end, when I was at uni. And one of the ones they were touring at was in Cardiff, and I was at uni in Treforest. I could have actually gone to see it, and I didn't. And I thought to myself, oh well, I'll get the next one, which will be in 2 years' time, as it always was. I didn't know it was going to be their last one. It's like, oh, the one opportunity I had to see Bottom live, and I chucked it. I've been kicking myself ever since.
I guess we all have our regrets, really. I feel that way about me being a lazy son of a bitch and getting myself into debt when I was at university. But you feel that way about not getting to see Bottom live. Cry.
Especially, well, I do have other regrets. Well, I've got other regrets as well, but I haven't got time to go through him, to be honest, Mark.
No pressure. We're here to talk about movies and TV, not talk about our personal matters. But I know that's why I wanted to bring it up and from earlier on, because that show, Rick Mail and Aid Edmondson, means so much to you. It's almost like, for me, Dexter's Lab, if you're talking about television. There's certain episodes I can't watch because I start getting emotional. Because it makes me very nostalgic for a time that no longer exists. I had a girlfriend. I had a lot of videos, mostly you and Peachy stuff. I was very popular at the schools. And I got to see stuff like Small Soldiers and Ants and Men in Black on the big screen. These quite edgy PG movies. Woo! Oh, I should have mentioned, there's one more movie I actually wanted to bring up. I know we talk about Carry On, but have you ever heard of No Sex, Please? We're British.
Well, I've heard of it, yes, not seen it.
Well, put it this way, it's a PG, right? But you wouldn't know it based on the title and also some of the humour involved in that. It is one of the most raunchiest PG films I've ever seen, even though we don't see nudity or sex, but it's obvious the whole movie's about a banker trying to hide a case of pornography of reels and photos away from his boss and also the police. I just kept wondering myself, because I got it from eBay or Amazon a few days ago. I was like, this is a PG, but it was from the 70s, so they were a little bit more loose about things. They probably thought, oh, it appeals to that sort of Carry On crowd. I just found it a bit unusual, really, because you can never do a PG work that deals up with smut nowadays. Never, even if it is quite restrained.
Well, I mean, that is correct, yes. That is correct, yes.
So if you ever do want a copy of the DVD just as a laugh and also see what they thought was passable at A certificate or PG back in the 70s, be my guest. But that's up to you.
I'll
my DVD.
I will keep it in mind. I won't mind. Yeah. So sure. With that in mind, shall we call it a day there?
Yes, we will. As always, thank you for stopping on by and talking about all these great movies and TV shows. Well, more so TV than anything. We'll be talking about martial arts. Yeah! Next week.
Iron. Well, yeah. See you all around.